Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology-agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, depending on where you're joining us from today. I'm very excited for our special guest who we're going to go in to talk about overcoming employee burnout and human behavior in technology today. Without further ado, I'm excited to introduce our special guest here. So Bree Peterson is a licensed therapist that specializes in human behavior. So today we're going to kind of dig into what that looks like, especially in a professional or technology setting. So thanks so much for joining me today, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited. So for all of our audience members or our podcast listeners after the fact here, can you kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Bree. I am a clinical licensed professional counselor. I work in a hospital setting. I work in something called an intensive outpatient and partial hospitalization program. During that program, we get all sorts of clients from different demographics. Most of them are professionals who have reached a place of burnout, either in their careers or in just their personal lives, that are coming to us looking to get some skills to get themselves back on track and back into a healthy balance. One of the things that we've noticed, especially in the last couple of years in a pandemic, is that people who traditionally had never needed any sort of mental health service are starting to experience stressors in life that just weren't there before. And a lot of times we can learn that we are short of the skills to manage these behaviors that are interfering with our productivity and our overall wellness. So the group that we teach is primarily a skills group. And then I also do private practice on the side.
Excellent. Well, we have lots to learn from you today, certainly, as I could assume in our current climate, post-COVID-19 pandemic, the world of professional mental health services has probably changed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Could you share some of kind of the triggers that you've seen for that sort of either mental health challenges that you've seen in a professional setting or maybe some triggers for employee burnout?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, there's going to be a ton of different things to cover. So I'll do my best to try to touch on which ones I can. But, you know, a big part of what we see is poor work-life home balance tends to be one of the number one things that leads to burnout. You know, as humans, our whole self is something that we want to be mindful of. And there's this thing that we talk about in behavioral therapies called the six dimensions of wellness. And those areas are going to be our emotional, our physical selves, our mental selves, our relational and social selves, our spiritual selves, and our occupational selves. And what usually tends to happen is if we have too much attention in one of those areas of life, so for instance, occupational, and we are off balance in the other areas of our lives, it can lead to a lot of distress and a lot of concern. And so a lot of times what we would see with our patients is that, especially during the pandemic, businesses are going under, we're adding financial stressors that weren't usually present, we're adding shortness of staff, having to overcompensate for people who are off on medical leave or just not able to come into the offices. We're juggling a lot more external stressors in our work environments than we had been used to. So primarily, we would see burnout in a lot of our professions that were helping professions, like doctors, police officers, firefighters. But in the last couple of years, we've been seeing a major increase, particularly with teachers, but also in a lot of tech and business mentalities because of our demographics, because of the changes of the socioeconomic concerns that have been coming up. And so seeing a lack of balance tends to be a really big problem for people. And then there's just also conflicts that arise when there's difficulties societally. You know, we're going through a societal trauma that is impacting every area of our work-life balance. And that would be what I would say is probably one of our number one sort of concerns that we're seeing with people coming in, is that everything feels very sort of like in your face, I guess.
Yeah.
And already stressful jobs are now having a whole nother layer of stress.
Absolutely. Well, I only have about 1,000 questions from the things you just said, but
perfect.
I think that's such a great overview. And just from a top line perspective, these 6 dimensions of wellness, what happens in a professional setting when one of those things might be in real area of trauma or really suffering for a professional? What are some things that you can see kind of in workplace behaviors that might come out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. A lot of times what we would be, it would be great if we could separate our work life from our personal lives, right? That'd be excellent. In fact, Apple TV just put a show out about that. I think it's called like Split or something like that. But the principle of it is that these people show up in this elevator, and when they walk into their work life, they have no memory of their personal life. And when they leave work, they have no memory of their work life. And it's this interesting like juxtaposition about like whether or not that is ideal. And what we know is that in theory, that sounds great, but it's just not practical. And it's not reasonable to be able to totally separate our personal lives from our work lives. And so a lot of times when we are looking at coworkers, you know, employees who are starting to struggle with their mental health, there are definitely some warning signs. One of the things we might start to notice is a difficulty of concentration, especially if you have a person who is usually quite productive and there's a change of a behavior with their abilities to accomplish their tasks or focus in meetings. That might be a sort of warning sign. Changes in mood or behavior might be another thing, especially if it's a difference, an extreme difference. If somebody is, you know, maybe a little bit more docile and, you know, calm, and you start seeing that they're shorter and more irritating, there could be something off balance, right? Now, obviously, in the workplace, we struggle with wanting to make sure that we're remaining ethical and not asking questions that are too personal, but we could definitely support coworkers who are struggling with their caseloads, their workloads, whatever that might be, would be one of the things we might want to look at. The way that we interact and engage with each other is sort of this baseline that gets set. And when we're deviating from a baseline for normal behaviors, I think it's safe to assume that there's probably something going on, and right, it could be something in one of those other dimensions.
Interesting. So you kind of touched on it a little bit. And from a leadership perspective, even middle management, a manager, those types of things, if you do manage employees within the workforce and you see some of these signs, what are some things that you can do to help address them in, mm-hmm, you know, a sensitive but appropriate way?
Yeah, I think checking in is a big piece of that. You know, we always want to keep professional boundaries up, especially in management. And so it's not really fair or safe to make any assumptions about maybe what's going on in a person's personal life. But I think the more sort of tangible evidence we have of these changes, like things like, hey, I noticed that you've been having a hard time meeting your deadlines. Is there something going on? Is there something I can help you with? I think approaching it from an angle of help sort of opens a door that allows your, you know, employee to feel comfortable perhaps expressing, yes, I'm feeling overwhelmed, or, you know, maybe it's a punctuality thing. Hey, I've noticed that you've been showing up to work a lot lately, and that's not a typical behavior for you. Is everything okay? Is there anything I can do to help? I think creating an environment that is welcome and open and focused around a language that is about helping versus reprimanding first is usually a better step, because that opens up a space for your employees to be able to share if things are happening that they do need help. They might say, yeah, I'm having a hard time concentrating and focusing, or I've been really down lately, or there's something going on with my kids and getting them to school. And we can kind of see if there's a bigger problem happening. You know, it's a tough spot, because we need our employees to be able to do their jobs and to do their jobs well. There are certain requirements. I don't think it's necessarily like about making accommodations, but checking in and caring about the well-being of your employees can go a really long way as a manager.
Certainly. And we talk about that a lot in digital transformation and our change practitioners. That's a big thing that they bring to the table is teaching executives and leaders, specifically with technology, how to create that open feedback loop, because technology can often stem a lot of fear. And what that means. And before I ask my next question, I just want to take a quick break to just mention where our guests are joining us from today. So we do have an international audience. So we have some from Louisville, Kentucky here, and Mesa, Arizona, Teresa Richardson, who's one of our change directors here at Third Stage. So she should have some great questions to ask. We've got some from Denver and Parker, Colorado. So, and then some internationally as well. So welcome everyone for joining us. I definitely highly encourage you to drop a question or some feedback, engage in the conversation in the chat while we have Bree to teach us, you know, how to be more human in technology, because that's not something we're typically great at. So with that, Bree, when you do talk about kind of the changes in specifically the technology industry and how employees are kind of suffering more in that area or being challenged in different ways that you didn't see kind of pre-pandemic, can you dig into what some of those areas are and maybe some root causes?
Yeah, I think some of the areas, I guess the best way that I can sort of like summarize it is, I think having to do with insecurity about jobs, insecurity about the functioning, insecurity about the finances going into businesses. I've had clients that have come in who were in the middle of a startup and right when the pandemic hit. And as you know, when you are launching startups, there is a whole lot that is going into that already. But on top of that, now we're adding funding sources being cut. We're adding having to cut staff because of that funding, having to juggle a whole lot more. And so what it just seems like with this pandemic, especially with my clients who have been in tech industries, is that it's already difficult enough to do something and, do something like a startup. But then when we're adding now, you have to add all these other facets to your job that originally somebody else was going to do, it adds a whole lot of juggling and a lot of time that goes into this project, this like baby that you've been putting out. Yeah. And so, you know, just like when there's any sort of economic crisis, those startups have really, my clients who have been in startup industries have really suffered. And then as a result of that, some of the people that are working with them are suffering because now we're all spread just so thin. And so I think that the financial climate changing has a huge impact on the tech industries. And plus, I mean, we are in a time where tech industries are involved like in medical fields and trying to keep up with the things that are changing and requirements. My brother actually works in medical sales and, I would always joke with him about how easy his job was, but then the pandemic hit. And the next thing you know, my brother, who is typically dealing with, these sales and it's pretty easy, he's now dealing with shortages. He's now dealing with these very unhappy clients. He's dealing with people who are in high need. And so the need changes so much with our society. And I think that has this trickle down effect into the individuals that are participating in this. And so I feel like it's just this increase of pressure to get everything done and to then juggle that, going back to the balance with everything else that's happening in their real lives, adds, not that work isn't a real life, but their home lives, adds that extra pressure and that balance to it as well. And I think I think also just the constant changing and the lack of security tends to lead to some very problematic behaviors.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that security piece you hit on, is obviously an essential need for just humans in general. And that I assume can manifest into a bunch of different things. You mentioned your brother that's in the healthcare industry, which has gone through a huge forced transformation, not only digitally, but dealing with, a completely different culture when it comes to how they work, what that looks like. So that's a huge transition. I know myself when I can't focus. It's because something has threatened my security, which for me in the pandemic is childcare. That's really difficult for me. It's a, you know, a childcare crisis. So that can manifest, I assume, in a lot of different forms for a lot of different people. And I love your idea of having that awareness, or specifically in a leadership position, to just check in and have that rhetoric and that talk track of health. I'm curious, when it comes to technology cultures, in we've been known for historically not having the most healthy culture a lot of times in technology industries, just because a lot of times the perception is hard skills, right? A technical person by definition means that they are an engineer, someone that a software engineer, a coder, those types of more hard positions. So I wondered if you could kind of give us a lens into company culture and how to humanize that in a space that has been historically not great at being able to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting because there are these two facets of our brains. We've got our emotional part of our brain and our logical part of our brain. And in one of the therapies that we teach, it's something called DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapies. Part of the goal for that mindfulness is using something called our wise mind that takes into account our emotional mind and our logical mind. If we swing too far into the logical mind, we might become cold and rigid, very black and white in our thinking, which can lead to a lot of very stubborn behaviors, a lot of digging heels in, a lot of power dynamics. When we lean too far into that emotional mind or that emotional self, we might be impulsive and reactive. And neither one of those creates a cultural environment that feels safe for people. Now, it's funny because us empaths, the emotional type, we always talk about how we don't do well with technology. Like because I don't understand it. I don't understand a computer and code. Talk to you about your feelings. I can understand that. I can connect with you. But there is this sort of like biological difference of personality that we do want to take into account, especially in a tech industry. Emotions, and recognizing emotions, talking about emotions, it probably won't come naturally in this environment. But that doesn't mean that people are not having an emotional experience. That doesn't mean that they're not experiencing fear or distress or self-doubt or self-loathing, you know, because humans, we're not robots and we're not machines. And so it kind of sells us, cuts us like short when we only look at people through that lens. And so I think trying to bring a balance into a work culture can be helpful there. Well, even if it's something like mixers or like a little bit of time before meetings to humanize the approach. I mean, fun is a little bit easier to deal with than anger, right? And so even opening up a door to allow some positive emotional experiences into the workday, then following that up with checking in and seeing, again, if somebody's behaviors are sort of a little bit off, being able to recognize that, you know, there is, you know, something else that can be done. Like something else can be done. We can check in on them. We can still ask them, but it definitely does become this question of, am I willing to be countercultural, which is ultimately what we're requesting, because the tech industry for so long has been very sort of techie. You know, and so am I willing to recognize these and adapt to and change some of that environment and that culture?
Absolutely. And I love your idea that like little things, a lot of times I think we spend way too much time as leaders or executives in thinking like, well, can we do like a big grand thing? And all of those actions are important, right, for employees to feel appreciated and valued. But sometimes it's just snacks in the break room and little things like that around that kind of start that trickle down effect of, oh, they're considering that I might be hungry, you know, or free coffee and things like that. And I think that's where a lot of the tech industry needs to start in order to make that transformation when we talk about company culture, because it can't happen overnight. And Teresa Richardson, who is one of our change practitioners, talks about kind of the timeline behind that transformation and just what that looks like as far as committing to it, but also understanding it's very much a journey, right?
Absolutely. And that's where we really do want to be able to set realistic goals for this change, that's right? You know, I mean, it's not realistic to sit down and have a circle with a talking stick in a tech environment where we really kind of just like open that door. That's not appropriate. Yeah. But, you know, checking in, like I like that you had mentioned meeting a physical need like food. They might be thinking about me. That is starting to humanize and it's starting to recognize, and even just coworkers following up on little things that they might know about their employees. Like, hey, how'd that baseball game for your kid go? Just a little bit of something, even if it's very small, can actually go a long way in morale for a person, because a person does want to feel seen and valued and know that they contribute to the team that they're a part of beyond just their skills, that they are liked, that they are enjoyed, because we do have this social component and the social need to ourselves where we do need to feel respected and appreciated to feel like we can fully thrive. And so I think whether that, if that's a creative person, maybe allowing the creative person to have a different sort of task that does reach some of that creative brain, you know, paying attention to the gifts and the skills that you have beyond the job description in your departments is a helpful tool that you could look
at. Oh, absolutely. Great, great point. And, you know, talking through a lot of that, it makes me think, how would you recommend creating that really inclusive and social culture that you mentioned in now a remote or hybrid work environment? We have a lot of people that are now, you know, working from home that aren't going back into the office, that can be really siloing, anxious, those types of things that employees or leadership is now wondering, well, how do we create a remote working culture and make sure that we are continuing to communicate that value for our employees so that they don't go somewhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that recognition is a huge piece of that. I think that if we can recognize positive things that employees are doing, I think a lot of times in the burnout culture, and when I say burnout culture, I mean the whole culture, right? Like we're all burnt out. We're all collectively tired. Industries are facing a lot of stressors, and it's really easy to say, let's just put my head down and get through the day, right? I think part of what we tend to do is we only reach out to our employees when they're doing something wrong, you know, or they've done something that is excellent. Mm-hmm. And so for the most part, I think employees can really fall between the cracks. Like if I'm doing my job and I'm doing my job well, I might feel like I'm never even acknowledged or recognized. And so I think sending a quick email like, hey, I saw that report you did. It looked really good. Send it like just an acknowledgement of something that's happening, or doing a quick FaceTime meeting a couple of times a month where we just check in and say, hey, how are you doing on your projects? Is there anything you need help or support with? I think being able to offer support, even if you as the direct supervisor cannot give that support because of other circumstances, is there somebody else that can meet the need that I can delegate and I can connect? If somebody is struggling with a training point, can I plug them in with somebody who is doing really well in that area? And I think personalizing the individual is a really, really gigantic first step that employers can start to do when looking at their employees, is recognizing those strengths and encouraging. A little bit of encouragement can go a very long way in building morale.
Absolutely. And I love also how you said the personalization. And it makes me think my husband, who actually works at Third Stage with me, he leads a lot of teams here, and he always knows about like some so-and-so's daughter is going to dance class and blah, blah, blah. And we've always had a remote culture. And I'm like, how do you do that? How do you know all of these things? And he's like, well, I always leave space with my one-on-ones when we start to actually have like a true human conversation. I've always admired his ability to do that and kind of stop from the go, go, go and recognize that each person has their own unique needs that they need to talk to and create that trust within that leadership connection.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. And I love that notion of building the time in and really looking at our schedule and saying, where can I create room for this?
If you are aiming for transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, define their roadmaps, and manage their transformations. With offices in the US, Europe, and Australia, Our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. If you are embarking on a digital transformation or business change initiative, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstageconsulting.com.
Parisa asked us, what guidance would you have for an employee who is feeling overwhelmed and needs a change? Should they broach the subject in a professional manner, or how should they do that, I should say?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, in the group that I teach, I do an entire hour-long lecture on this very question. We talk about it as our communication, our assertive communication skills. And sometimes what can make it very difficult for us to use our assertive communication skills is when there's a perceived power dynamic. Talking to a boss, asking for help, especially when, going back to the security, it feels like my livelihood is dependent upon this job. Right? So a lot of times what we might end up doing is just keep saying yes, and we keep on taking on more. And then that builds, it adds to the plate. Before long, we're overwhelmed and we're totally ready to shut down. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to open up a conversation that talks about the benefits for receiving the accommodation for the company is a great way to word that. An assertiveness script is something we call the dear man. And so the describing, let's say I'm feeling overwhelmed and I have to talk to my boss. It might be something like, hey, I have a lot of projects that I'm juggling right now and I'm having a hard time keeping up with everything. We want to stick to what we're talking about. We don't want to pull in all the things that are happening in our personal lives yet. We don't want to overshare or make excuses. We really just want to stick to the point. What's happening is I'm having a hard time maintaining this workload, right? That helps us hone the conversation in, and we're setting ourselves up for a productive and assertive conversation. The expression would be expressing the emotion that's involved with it. So in the same context, I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, and I know when I'm overwhelmed, I don't produce as good of work. You know, being able to speak to how we're feeling is a difficult bridge to gap when we're not used to that in a work environment. But again, having healthy relationships with our bosses, supervisors, being able to have open and transparent conversations is huge there. And then the A is asserting myself. So that's asking for what I need. I need more time on this project. I need some help. I need some coaching. I need some guidance. And the next thing we want to look for is the R, which is reward. I believe if I get that, I will be productive. I will be efficient. I will do this project well. I'll get it in on time with a little bit of help, right? Because what we want to be setting up when we're talking to or asserting a need or a boundary, especially to a supervisor, is that there is a reward for them. And that will be, I can prevent myself from burning out. Because the fact of the matter is, if we reach max burnout, that's when a medical leave of absence is necessary, right? Yeah. If I've reached max burnout, if I'm getting to that place where I know I'm going to, you know, pop the top and just lose it, then I'm preventing that by asking for the help now. And so being aware of ourselves, especially if we've tried self-care, leaving work at home, all of these other things to try to prevent ourselves from reaching that place of being overwhelmed. The other side of that is setting up goals that are specific and smart for ourselves. So if we're overwhelmed by a project, sometimes we can really get in our heads when we're looking at that project as a whole instead of the next step. And so if we're struggling on an interpersonal level with being overwhelmed and we're maybe not feeling all the way comfortable yet asking for help or reaching out to a supervisor, can I simplify? Can I bring that down? Can I take it a step at a time, do some breathing in between so that I'm not becoming so overwhelmed and dysregulated at work?
Wow. I mean, that I'm like, you know, furiously taking notes here for myself. Okay. But no, so that sounds like, especially kind of those talk tracks or those templates of asking for what you need, that sounds like it could be packaged into like a really valuable training or resource. So how would you recommend leaders, being HR leaders or change management leaders, to package that without seeming kind of invasive? You know what I mean? Like, this is what you should say, this is what you should do, as opposed to saying like, this is a resource for you in order to help have a very vulnerable conversation that I think is brave to have, and that makes you a good advice. So how would you recommend leadership positioning that as a resource or other, you know, employee benefit mental health resources?
Absolutely. I think it's a trickle down. And I think it starts actually with training your managers and your supervisors. I think having conversations like this one that we're having, you know, reaching out to some of your like local supports, whether it's individual therapists, there's also people who actually do trainings like this for corporations that can meet with this upper management, do, you know, so we can learn about trauma and being a trauma-informed work environment. So we can learn about cultures and cultural impacts and implications. I think training your managers and trainers is where it starts, because if we have management that is approachable, it's more likely that our employees are going to feel comfortable then using these skills. And I think that having great employee assistant programs, having benefits for mental health counseling, those sorts of things are also incredibly important in corporations, because if a person is struggling and having a hard time, for them to know we are a company that values you and your overall wellness, including your mental health, employees might take an opportunity to go talk to a counselor. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of my clients in the past 2 years had never even considered counseling before because they just hadn't needed it up until that point. And then I think we can treat it like cultural competency trainings, you know, managing conflict in the work environment, communication in the work environment. You can do sort of like seminars and you can do trainings, you know, whether they're virtual or whatnot, to start to change the language of these cultures, to start to let them know, hey, this is what we're on board with. We would like for you to come on board with us to make this a healthier work environment for everybody. But I really think it has to start at that upper management, learning the skills and buying into that value.
Absolutely. And so just so I understand, because I didn't ever really associate trauma with a professional environment. Can there be trauma in a workplace, or can you talk to that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think when it comes to sort of, so trauma is an interesting thing, because a lot of times we minimize trauma. We think about PTSD or some sort of like natural disaster, some sort of abuse, but power dynamics and unhealthy cultures can lead to very traumatic interactions. If people are feeling put down, or if they're feeling unheard, if they're being taken advantage of, being worked to the bone, so to speak, our bodies can have a natural trauma response to that, not to mention our own personal traumas that are being brought into our work environments. And so for upper management, for HR, for, you know, CEOs to be aware that we want to be cognizant about the fact that we are working with human beings here who respond to things differently, who perceive things differently, who are coming from different cultures and experiences, it gives us the space to say, maybe I need to take better care of my employees in that way by creating environments that aren't maybe that if there is something in the environment that can cause harm, maybe reevaluating that and saying, is there another way for me to approach this with them? But burnout can oftentimes manifest as trauma, you know, especially in the last 2 years, we've kind of gone through this global trauma, right? And we've all been impacted on personal levels with what's happened around us in our economy, with our physical health and world. And people are going to be bringing those trauma and therefore their trauma triggers into their work environments, because you can't separate that. Yeah. So to be trauma-informed, to have a trauma-informed environment, helps us navigate when a trauma trigger happens, how can I, as a staff member, as a CEO, as HR, how can I navigate and manage that well, remembering that my employees are people, you know, Wow. Not just replaceable.
Yeah, that's super powerful. I honestly had no idea, that was something, but it makes a ton of sense, and being able to have that true understanding of that impact of the workplace, because we spend so much time there, right? And understanding that it has to be a place of inclusivity, and it also has to match your culture, right, as a person, mm-hmm. and what your goals are. So absolutely, that's such good information. I want to get into a little bit about digital transformation. And so digital transformation, we kind of talked about, is when any company is going through a technology change, whether it's an upgrade, mm-hmm. implementation, new software selection. And this can be a time of really high stress for not only the leadership of the company because of the investment, time, and resources, but also the project execution team. So I want to start at kind of a top-down approach like we talked about. One of the keys to success for digital transformation is executive alignment, which can be one of the hardest things to secure because of the behavior and personalities of a typical executive group. So if you are going through a digital transformation or really any strategic initiative and need to solidify that alignment, what are some of the things from a human behavior standpoint we should consider when working with an executive tier of a company?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's a couple of things that we want to look at. And I think that this will actually be the whole trickle down. People in general don't do great with change. You know, we have, going back to that security thing, some of those animalistic ways that we respond to things are in our fight, flight, and freeze. And so what happens when we've got an executive team is we're bringing different people with different personalities to the table that are going to have different objectives, different opinions, different priorities, different values. And so I agree that it's so important at the top tier that we're a united front. Because if you are, I mean, think about it with parenting, right? If two parents are not on the same page with their kids, they're going to triangulate. Like mm-hmm. if they know dad always lets them have the fruit snacks and mom doesn't let them have the fruit snacks, they're going to go to dad first. And if mom says no, they're probably going to go to dad afterwards and hope that the two of them aren't communicating. You know, obviously as adults, we have outgrown a lot of that behaviors, but not necessarily at the core. We always are trying to, you know, have our needs and objectives met. And so I think recognizing things like different personalities, being aligned on things like company and cultural values of our company, and making sure that the changes that we're ruling out, we are on the same page with. That might be calling in a professional to help you navigate mm-hmm. if you cannot reach that united front on your own. That might be compromising in certain things, but I think that, you know, personalities, baseline responses to things, cultures, those sorts of things are all going to impact when we're moving forward a systematic change. And getting on the same page, understanding communication styles, learning skills for healthy communications, that's where consultants can be really helpful if for some reason we're not able to get on that same page on our own. Because it's
absolutely. Yeah, totally. And I think you, you do our subtle sales messaging better than we do now when it comes to consultants. And we always joke here that our change practitioners are really therapists that go into the actual piece. And I definitely want to get into that in just a little bit. But when it comes to the project team, like we talked about, these might be people that are putting in 60 hours a week for a temporary amount of time because they are implementing this technology. And it might be going really well in one area of the business, but completely failing in another. And that's, you know, obviously a huge point of stress. So if you are a project leader or something like that, or even an employee in your own awareness, how can you make sure that burnout doesn't happen in those times of really high stress?
Yeah, that's a tough balance to accomplish for sure. But bringing back into our overall wellness is the first place we're going to want to look at. So if we know that there's a temporary stressor, like for the next 3 months, I'm going to be working 60 hours, right? Mm-hmm. I think that upper management, the leadership, that sort of thing, we can look at that and we can recognize it. So anything that we can take off of the plates of somebody who has a temporary job change as they're trying to move something forward can be helpful in offering that same amount of support. The other thing is we might want to consider creating time and space in those projects for self-care, whether that's, hey, on Friday of the third Friday every month, I want you to take a half a day. I know we've got a lot to go. I know that there's a lot of pressure, but it's important for you to take care of yourself, right? PTO benefits, things like that. Maybe even if it's in the budget, sending a gift card to a steak restaurant where they can go take a night with whoever their loved ones are and decompress. Showing that physiological support in this difficult time, recognizing that it's temporary, using that language and encouragement of saying, hey, you're doing a great job. I know that this is hard, you know, and then again, alleviating some of the things that we can. So like if previous job functionings are maybe not as important right now, is there somebody else that can take over that so they're not juggling all their regular things and then the new things on top of it? You know, really being sort of mindful of it being temporary and getting everybody on the same page of recognizing this, we can do this, we can do this hard thing right now, we've got each other's backs. And I think that that is going to also involve each individual learning how to manage their own stress. Because what happens, I think, a lot of times is that we don't do a good job managing our own stressors, and then we can take things out on our employees or our coworkers. Right. And we maybe are brash, we're maybe too quick, we're maybe too rigid. And then that trickles down into them, knocks them off. They're now afraid about the security of their job and productivity. And round we go.
Right.
So making sure that everybody that's a part of that team is caring for themselves. Obviously, you can't force somebody to do self-care. But again, going back into that environment, can we find an hour? Can we take a break? Can we have a coffee break? Can we, you know, if is losing that 1 hour or was working that 1 hour worth the potential benefits of supporting my team? Does that absolutely sort of answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. You totally nailed it, as you've done this entire time. It's like you're a pro at live stream podcasting. So perfect.
This is my first one, actually.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're not your last one with the way you're doing. No. So taking that and scaling it in a different area, because I think it's so important, you know, what you said about being able to make those not only communicate that the benefit or that the project is temporary, but also looking at the benefits and making sure that you're creating that space, carving out that space for self-care. I wondered what your take would be on multinational companies and cultures. You know, for example, we work as a global consultancy, and so we might have a manufacturing plant in Zimbabwe, and then we might have a distribution area in London, and then, you know, a different leg of the organization in Seattle. And so sometimes it can be really difficult bringing together all of those cultures, because I think a lot of times many of those executives kind of sit in their office and they say, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to tell them they all need to do this and don't realize the impact that culture can have. So I wondered if you could speak to that a little bit on how they could be mindful that these are completely different entities, not only multinationally, but throughout an organization, those sub-entities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is probably one of the most vital things that anybody in that's a CEO, managing a company, managing people can do is be aware and mindful of cultural competencies. It is probably understanding mental health and cultural competencies is probably two of the most important things that we really do need to do. And now there's trainings that you can take, cultural competency trainings, which is obviously only one part of it. But the next piece of it is really doing our diligence to actually be communicating with our counterparts and asking them their preferences and their needs. You know, I think a lot of times what we sort of do, especially in this very, you know, productivity focused culture, right? Time is money. That's what we hear all of the time. And we have deadlines to meet. We have, you know, all sorts of barriers to getting these things done. But to be able to take time and to say, hey, this is what we're thinking. What do you think about that? Does that feel like it will work with your team? And also posturing ourselves in a way that says, please, if that's not going to work with you, let me know, right? I don't necessarily think we need to go in there and say, tell me what's offensive to you, right? Because that might be offensive. And so instead it's going to be going in there and really treating and under doing our own work to understand cultures, but also creating an environment that is inclusive of a decision making, you know, mm-hmm. especially like, you know, you think that there are some Muslim cultures that pray at certain times yeah. in a day. And mm-hmm. so if you're working with somebody who has very strong religious point of views, it might be offensive if you are pushing to schedule a meeting during a time that is important for their religious mm-hmm. practice, mm-hmm. you know, also time differences. You know, one of the things that I've learned about people in France is that people in France, the school system is all like backwards. Like they take a really long lunch break. Everybody comes home and has lunch as a family, you know, like, because we don't really know, or they take months off for vacations, which I really wish we would buy into that one.
Me too.
But, I'm good, you know, so because we just to be aware that there are cultural things at play here, even not only with national cultures, but within our own society, there are different cultural barriers mm-hmm. that we need to be aware of. So keeping an open posture, asking people from different cultures, their preferences, their input, their feedback, opening up that conversation is going to be a huge part of it, because then we're not making assumptions. I think it's when we make assumptions that we really do sort of make fools of ourselves, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Versus actually just checking in and saying, is this okay? And that mm-hmm. can go a really long way, I think. Absolutely. But again, there's consultants for cultural competency trainings that I do very much so recommend.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. And that brings me kind of to my next piece of it. Obviously, we do a ton in organizational change management. And one of our biggest barriers is not having, I would say, a communication competency is what I would build off of the cultural competency, in the fact that many times we might be working with an IT focus team, even though we do promote diversity within the core cultural team, mostly so that our businesses can get an understanding of, oh, this affects you in this way in that department. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. And opening up that channel for communication. But a lot of times we struggle with helping organizations to understand that organizational change management is actually the number one key to implementing any new technology, and it mm-hmm. is not just an email. So in a scenario where you have a new technology entering an employee's sphere of influence or experience, right, and they're just told, like, hey, we're turning on this new system, half your job is now automated. And all of a sudden we have this huge pocket of resistance because they're like, whoa, are robots taking over the world? What's mm-hmm. happening? Especially in our current climate with emerging technologies such as AI, predictive analytics, those types of things. Mm-hmm. So how can we as organizational change consultants or business leaders understand the impact of telling someone half your job will now be automated in a way that is not going to be the scariest thing you've ever mm-hmm. said to someone in a work environment?
Yes. And that will, I mean, the way that we present this can very much so lead to panic. And panic is one of the strongest emotions we can experience. Panic, anger, fear, all of that stuff becomes really overpowering and will very much so cloud the judgment of the person who's experiencing that. And so if we're going back to the model of understanding security, I think a lot of times people don't do well with change because they're fearful. They don't know what that's going to mean for them. And so making sure that we're taking the time to say, this is part of your job is going to be automated. This is how it's going to change your job. But to be able to assure, if this is the case, your pay is going to be the same. You're still a valued employee. We have other opportunities that we want to explore that we will need you to be a part of. Because I think that, you know, with anything, people are afraid of being pushed out of their security, of their, you know, this culture, this place that has been important to them. You know, I think about it with even going back is to just different cultures or different generations, looking at this sort of like email culture. You know, my dad is 60, I think 5 or something like that. And I love to tease him because he texts like this. You know, one finger, and he types one finger. And part of what I have to recognize is my dad's doing a great job keeping up with technology as it's changing. Yeah. But a lot of our older demographics of employees, they didn't have computers, they didn't have laptops, they didn't have cell phones. And so when they see another system change, there becomes this fear sometimes of, will I be able to keep up? Am I adequate? Am I enough? You know, changing somebody's job, especially if they've been in it for a while, can be very fearful. So offering trainings when a system trains, letting them know that their job is secure, letting them know what it is that we will be asking of them since this portion of our job is now going automatic. Also explaining the benefits for the company and for them by automating the system, right? Is it going to save us money? Is it going to, you know, free up their time to do other things? I think that's where communication is so important. And our temptation is just, here's an email, we're doing it, you know, because I said so. And people in general don't do well with because I said so. They want to know and have understanding of why the system's changing and how it will benefit them.
Absolutely. I mean, that's so important, that assurance piece and really understanding the importance behind that, because much of the resistance is often unintentional. Mm-hmm. Teresa, our change practitioner, always says, and I'll steal her line here, people don't come to do a bad job. There just might be this level of insecurity around their security within the workplace. So definitely well said. We also struggle, and I'd love to get your take on kind of this misinformation sometimes. So there's kind of this rumor mill type of water cooler culture where all of a sudden you're talking about a new system for supply chain management, and now they're saying, well, we're redoing all the finances of the business. And that kind of that toxicity moves through the overall lower or upper sometimes tier of the organization. So how can you help to manage any misinformation around your new technology in defining it and communicating it so you don't create this unrest or disruption within your overall company culture?
Again, I think this is going to be one of those trickle down things. I think there's a couple of like very practical things we can do. And then there's a couple very specific things we can do. I think from a practical point of view, opening up communications, maybe it's newsletters, maybe it's videos where CEOs are explaining the changes. Maybe it's meetings that the management department is meeting with each of their team to make sure that they answer any questions they might have to create that support. That's one of the ways that we can do those things. The other thing, once the wildfire has been sparked, so to speak, that we can do is something called relational immediacy. A lot of times when we're experiencing, say we're out at lunch and we hear a coworker rattling off something, we kind of buy into the drama, right? We sort of are like, oh no, because they're speaking about my fears, right? What are my fears? I want to be valued. I want to feel secure. I want to be seen. I want to feel like I have a purpose. And, you know, if somebody else is fueling that, that's going to make that fire grow so much faster. So nixing those things when we see it, that's going to start on a cultural baseline. And that's really going to be peer to peer. And so if we're creating a positive, if managers are creating a positive, you know, empowering environment for their employees, I might hear a coworker say something and be like, you know, that's not what my manager said. You know, it sounds like we're maybe getting kind of upset about that. Maybe we should go talk to them and find out. You know, if we can start to train and model that through those one-on-one relationships, manager to staff, we might be able to cut some of that off at the pass. Or if we are a manager and we're hearing about these things, instead of buying into the drama and being like, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said that, right? That's going to just that's going to create this power differentiation that's just going to be ugly. Yeah. Instead, what we can do is go back and revisit that. If we're catching wind that there are things that are going on, we're going to call a meeting and we're going to open the floor, question and answer, and we're going to be prepared to respond to that. But it's keeping the eye out and the ear out to make sure that we are trying to, you know, correct any misinformation to the best of our ability is really, really probably the best approach for that. Building those relationships so people feel comfortable, but then also making sure that we are sharing enough, which I know adds another layer of complication because our managers, our CEOs were really busy. And so that's where getting involved with tech teams, doing videos during off hours, you know, having somebody responsible for a newsletter or something like that, we can definitely delegate some of that communication, but that communication is imperative.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so well said, in being able to understand the importance of needing that communication, or at least templatizing, right, that ability to do that within your management tier so that you are able to kind of buck that really important middle management tier. Because that's really, you know, what creates that subculture and that experience for that employee. So definitely. Well, in our last couple minutes here, Bree, I want to ask you about data, which is something we don't typically associate with organizational change management or human behavior. But for us, it's a way for us to showcase to our clients or help our clients create awareness, specifically at the executive level, around what are some measurements of your culture's ability to change, of their readiness to change, and just their overall perception of your business through their human behavior. And the ultimate success piece of a digital transformation is user adoption, which inherently is defined as a human behavior, right? The user has to be engaging with the new system. How you, as a human behavior professional and expert, how would you measure human behavior or the current climate of overall employee perception within an organization?
So very practical way. So measurement data is so important. It's important in all of our fields. As therapists, we do the same thing. We have different measurement tests, our generalized anxiety scores, our PHQ-9, which has to do with, you know, depression scales. It's important for us to see, how did you feel when we started? How are you feeling now? How do you feel when you end? So when we do our treatment programs, that's a 4-week program, we'll ask the same set of questions at the beginning, at the middle, at the end. And so I think gathering that information is a really important piece here. And there are different survey monkeys, things that you can put together that are specific to your cultural needs, but it's continuing to collect the data. When we roll out a new system, how did you feel after that training? How are you feeling with the competency here? After you've been working that system for a little bit, same questions 3 months later, are we seeing difference? Are we still experiencing resistance? Have people adapted? Because if at that 3-month mark, we're still experiencing resistance or having problems with it, we might have to go back and troubleshoot and say, what do we need to do to get everybody on board with this? And so I think sending out surveys, having one-on-one conversations to collect that data and be able to keep track of it. Here's what people are saying. Here's how they're experiencing the systematic change. Here's how they're experiencing the new software. Here are the trouble points for them. Breaking that down into our age demographics is another piece of it. Are my millennials and Gen Xers getting this a lot quicker than my boomers, you know, and, you know, what's going on here? Do I need to offer extra support and training for these people who are struggling? And what does that look like? So I think really asking questions and asking them again is another huge piece of this. I don't think it's like a one question, one survey is going to get the information across, you know?
Yeah, that consistency and frequency sounds like that's absolutely key to measuring human behavior and the change and trends.
And you can ask questions about how do you feel about it? Like from a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel on using the software? From a scale of 1 to 10, maybe even we list the emotions, right? Like our anxiety scale of 1 to 10, you know, overwhelm scale of 1 to 10. And really, I mean, you can tailor it based upon, of course, whatever you're presenting. But I think being able to create even text box within that where people can say specifically what their concerns are or what they're struggling with. But then I think the key from the leadership point of view is that we're not taking those surveys and doing nothing with it, that we're taking those surveys as an opportunity to listen to and offer support where there is problematic areas.
Absolutely. And I think that's key to overall employee perception too. You know, creating that circle of feedback of saying, hey, I saw that you put this on a survey. These are the action steps that I'm doing as a leader to make sure that you feel heard and then your purpose is being met. So I think that, you know, is a huge piece as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's so interesting. I love talking tech and psychology because, you know, it's so different, but it's also so necessary for all of us. Like, I mean, I use tech every day at my job to track things and to document and, you know.
Yeah, and human behavior comes into our world in every conversation that we have. And I think Parisa popped it up here for us. I wrote a blog this week on creativity and technology and how really that is the key to that digital transformation piece, because you need that really catalyst to being able to creatively understand and absorb how your team is feeling, or it's never going to be successful. It's just not, you know, you cannot at this day and age force a technology on people. It's just not something that's going to happen in this employee marketplace. And it's just not something that you want to do, because it's not going to maximize your business value as well.
And ultimately, too, if people can't change with the programs as they're changing and they are quitting their jobs, we're adding so many costs to hiring, to training, to all of that stuff. And so it might feel sort of like a little bit of that pressure of being like, oh, well, this is annoying to have to keep coming back and to keep doing training. But to keep that long-term perspective is that we want to have employee retention. That's important for our companies and our businesses, too. And so recognizing those behaviors, offering environments of support, making people feel valued, seen, and secure, all of those things I think are going to be massively important if we want to have effective and successful businesses.
Well said. We should put that on a t-shirt, seen and secure. I think that's what we should do.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time and insight today, Bria. It's been so cool to talk to you and be able to understand how important understanding human behavior really is to a digital transformation and just in general in our workplace life and overall experience.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.